Hi, I'm Allison Kulo.
Hi, I'm Roger Goldman. Welcome to Mountain Money.
The climate is changing. Not only the meteorological climate, but also the social, economic, and psychological climate. We are living in a disrupted world that is increasingly divided along the lines of economics and politics, says Scott Schwartz, a financial sustainability expert. Scott Schwartz, IntentVest CEO and founder, founded three investment firms and has over $1 billion in pension assets, overseen billions in pension assets. With an MBA and 27 years of experience in the financial industries, he is focused on bringing state-of-the-art technology to sustainable investing. Scott is here joining us this morning. Scott, thank you for joining us on Mountain Money.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you. Well, let's just start kind of with the best question first. Why did you feel it was important to write the book, and how long did it take?
Well, I think it's really important that people understand that climate change is not a political thing. It's a real thing. And we need to adapt to a changing climate. We can profit from the disruption. The book has really been a multi-decade project for me. After college, I was a weather and climate major. I started exploring the world from the land, air, and sea. As a pilot, as an airline pilot, we plug in the temperature aloft of what it's supposed to be. And it's based on what it's supposed to be on an average. And I started finding in my career that it used to be 7 degrees warmer, 7 degrees colder, something like that. And then I found that the temperature was always warmer, never colder, and then a lot warmer. Instead of a couple degrees warmer, a couple degrees colder, it was often 10 degrees warmer than we had expected. So the temperature at altitude was drastically getting warmer from my anecdotal experience. Also, I started sailing down in Antarctica and up in Greenland, and I saw huge ice floes coming off the shelf in Greenland, one half the size of Manhattan Island. And in Antarctica, I ran into this crazy researcher guy, Charlie Porter. He was a professor at a university in Argentina, and he had spent his lifetime studying climate change down in Antarctica. And he told me, based on the ice core samples — ice cores is sort of like you pull the ice cores out of the ice, and it's like looking at the tree rings — and he said that the level of melting was incredibly accelerated, more than he'd seen basically in millions of years, based on his research. So to answer your question, it took about 4 years to put the book from pen to paper, but it's been a lifetime effort.
Before we go on with asking about the book, I want to just take a side note that one of the wonderful things about it is how interesting your life is. Everything from being a pilot to exploring and sailing. So just a side note for our listeners, the side notes about Scott's life are really, really a lot of fun. Let's talk a little bit about meteorological changes. One of the core theses of the book is that weather is going to change long-term economic trends. Can you flesh out a little bit about why that is and how you think it's going to get manifested?
Okay, well, first of all, the planet's getting warmer. I think we all understand that. The greenhouse effect of having carbon in the air is causing that. It's causing sea level rise. It's causing droughts, food scarcity, energy source changes. We're starting to use less hydrocarbons and more alternative energies such as solar and wind and so forth. So there's a lot of opportunities in investing in terms of these meteorological changes.
So you know, with regards to that, though, you know, how can you give some examples of how those meteorological changes impact the economy? You know, what are we going to see, or what are kind of those first changes that we're going to see?
Well, I think we're seeing it. The sea level rise is affecting places in southern Florida and down in the Gulf. We're seeing this storm right now, storms that we haven't seen in Louisiana, that's causing severe damage and disruption. And then those houses will have to be rebuilt. Those areas will have to be cleaned up, and someone will have to do that work, and someone will get paid, and some resources such as construction materials and so forth will have to be purchased. So there'll be a lot of ancillary income produced by these disruptions. And if you're in the right industry, like producing solar panels or windmills, or do doing desalination or creating these construction materials, you can benefit from it. So it's changing the economy. Things that it was like when we stopped using buggy whips and we started building cars. As you know, as we adapt, we have to create new industries or enhance industries that already exist, and other industries, sadly, will suffer.
And I think one of the things that I continue to look at and that your book put quite predominantly is food production.
Yeah, food production is probably going to be one of the most huge impacts in terms of the way we produce food. And one of the connections between the food is the water. It takes a lot of water to produce, say, a pound of beef versus a pound of soybeans. So the existing resources will have to be shifted a bit as time goes on. Also, there's a lot of exciting new technologies that are allowing food to be produced in a more efficient way. Like, I'm sure we've all had an Impossible Burger or Beyond Burger, something like that, which is a profound change in the way that we eat. Plus, many other ways of food changing production, particularly hydroponics.
Yeah, food is a good example of one of the things I really liked about the book, which was that, you know, the concept of ESG investing is a, you know, sort of a buzzword that is thrown around a lot at a superficial level. What the book does is it delves into specific kinds of sectors that are likely to be affected by climate change and how an investor should look at them. We started with food. It really is extraordinary, the resource intensity of our current diet. And so I think one of the things you talk about is the potential for laboratory-grown beef meat alternatives. Can you flesh out a little bit of how that might work and why you think that might be an interesting sector?
The question was about, was it meat alternatives?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I guess they're growing meat in the labs using at the cellular level. So they're basically growing steaks in a Petri dish. I mean, it sounds disgusting on its face, but I think it has potential in terms of creating income for those companies. But I'm certainly not a scientist in the food developing area. But I know that food, particularly the plant-based foods with the Beyond and the Impossible, that technology is just exploding.
So food was one example. Let's turn to another one. Let's talk about, you know, obviously the classic ESG investment is in the energy sector. Can you flesh out a little bit about how a prudent investor should be analyzing opportunities with energy?
Yeah, energy's huge. I think energy and food are probably the two biggies. The solar panel is a big one. I think we all know about that. But solar panels themselves have become commodities. So I'm not sure that necessarily the solar panels themselves may be the best investment, but the infrastructure of putting those solar panels up is a big deal. And the batteries storing the energy, like LG and Tesla make these power walls, which is a huge way to maintain the energy and use it. I have a Tesla battery in my home, so when we have a power failure, we keep on going. The solar panels on the house power the Tesla battery. The Tesla battery powers the house if we have a disruption. You can also use the Tesla battery to meter your energy. So during times of the day when energy is expensive, you can use your battery. And when energy is cheap, if you want to use the grid, you can balance out the inflows and outflows of energy based on the capturing of solar into the battery, into the home, and playing the grid. So there's different ways of capturing energy on kind of a personal level. You can also invest in ETFs and funds that specialize in energy, particularly ESG-driven energy, renewable energy. There's hydro energy. There's wind energy. It's really becoming a thing. And there's a lot of easy ways to invest in it using mutual funds and ETFs.
So I want to go into another sector, and that's water. You know, water mitigation and how there can be profits from water mitigation. Because I know a lot of times when we talk about water, and especially the book goes into it, how much we spend just to bottle water, you know, and what kind of energy that itself takes. And so to know that, you know, there are some potential projects that can provide profits is very interesting. Can you share those?
Sure. You know, it's kind of funny. The term rival is sort of an enemy. It means enemy, right? And the term comes from the word river. So rival comes from river, and river rival comes from having different groups of people on either side of the river fighting over the water. So water wars is something that's been going on forever, and it's something that will go on even more so in the future. People talk about gold as a hedge on a bad economy. I think food and water is a better hedge on a bad economy, because what are you going to do with gold in a real tough environment? So drinking water in 2020 was a $6.3 billion industry. It's huge. Some countries, they don't produce their own water. They have to ship it in. So obviously that's a huge way to profit from the water, but we don't like to do that. I think as a culture, we have trouble capitalizing on other people's harm. But bottled water is certainly one of the biggest. I talked to someone at Coca-Cola recently, and they said that they have to continue to use plastic, which is troublesome, because it actually uses more energy to clean the water bottles than it does to use plastic. The other technological concept is desalination, or reverse osmosis, basically taking seawater and turning it into fresh water. That's a thing that's going to become much bigger in the future as we become more stressed with fresh water. Fresh water only amounts to about 5% of the planet's water. So at some point, it'll likely be necessary to desalinate salt water. And the way to do that is to jam water through these really fine membranes. But to do that requires a lot of energy. So it's right now it's too expensive to desalinate salt water in most environments. So as energy becomes more efficient and more alternative energies are created, it'll be easier to desalinate. So the two biggies, in my opinion, are bottled water, as you mentioned, Allison, and the reverse osmosis associated with desalination.
Historically, manufacturing in this country has actually been a major adverse impact on the environment. You can visualize, plants on the edges of rivers dumping raw refuse into them and creating all kinds of current problems. Talk a little bit about how you see ESG impacting manufacturing as an investment sector.
Okay, well, there's a couple things going on to unpack that. First of all, companies are becoming much more thoughtful about how they operate in an ESG environment. One of the implications is chief financial officers are also creating new departments, ESG departments within the company. And lately I've been hearing stories of CFOs who were reluctant to hire the ESG director to begin with, calling the ESG director in and saying, hey, what have we done lately? The only way we're going to get investment in this company, new investment, is if we improve our ESG ratings. So there's the pressure from the outside investors to have the manufacturers be more ESG conscious at the CFO level. So that's one thing, and that's why investing in ESG is so powerful. It forces companies, even that don't necessarily want to do the right thing, to do the right thing. But from a specific level, manufacturing solar panels, windmills, electric vehicles, robotics, drones, companies like Tesla, BMW, and Zero Motorcycles, which is an electric motorcycle company in Santa Cruz, California. There are a lot of opportunities to both put pressure on companies to be more ESG that are manufacturers and to create new sectors of manufacturing that are ESG as well.
I think that's the piece that I liked about the book so much, is that often when we talk about ESG investing, it's about, spurring companies to be better stewards of the environment versus what are those new groundbreaking technologies that are going to come out that could change the game. And that's what I think you've done a really good job identifying. Another sector area that you talk about is AI. And, what can AI do to help us with the climate?
Well, AI is huge, and it's not as new as we think it is. We've been hearing a lot about AI, but AI has been with us for over 20 years. Gordon Moore, the founder of Intel, created this thing inadvertently called Moore's Law, which claims that technology doubles every 2 years. In computer technology, basically, which is a subset of AI. So in 2019, there was $40 billion of income in the AI business, $40 billion. In 2020, it was $62 billion in the AI industry. AI, artificial intelligence, which is scary, but my view is we have two ways of handling. We can use it as a tool, and it could really be good for the planet, or we could have it hurt us. But it's up to us through legislation and as a choice of humanity how we want to handle AI. But one of the benefits of AI is weather prediction. That is really a big deal. We can know when a tornado is going to hit a few minutes before we would have otherwise using weather prediction with artificial intelligence. We can manage energy. We can manage the way the windmills work. We can turn on and off the water flow from hydroelectric dams. We can manage water and energy resources using AI. You know, we all know that we've all been annoyed by Amazon, and when we're on the internet and we're trying to Google something, and then we get spammed by Amazon because they noticed that we were looking up something, and now they're trying to sell us something using the AI. Well, that's probably one of the downsides of AI, but the upsides of AI, in my opinion, are way more powerful than the downsides. And I think we need to really, really use it and really think about using it smarter. It's very powerful, and I think it's going to be one of the biggest movers in the economy and in the sustainable movement moving forward.
People are scared of it, though. And I think somewhere in the book, am I correct that you made reference to laws of robotics that were derived by a famous science fiction writer in the 1960s?
Yeah, it was funny. I was at a event where these younger people, younger I mean like in their 20s and 30s, were demonstrating a robot. Now, what this robot did, it was basically a cooler on wheels, and it would drive around the city, and it would drop off drugs to older people. So you would wait, the older person would wait in their home. This little box would show up. It would text you the code. You'd run out, grab the type the code in, and you would pull out your drugs. So it was a robot that was delivering drugs, and it was doing it now. I mean, this was about two years ago. So I asked the question of the CEO, who was, like I said, who was young, relatively for a CEO. I go, what about the three laws of robotics? The laws being that the robot can't hurt a human, the robot can't cause a human to get hurt, and a robot has to protect itself, but not at the expense of humans. And he looked at me like, what are you talking about? He had no idea about either Asimov's three laws of robotics or that it was even a thing that we needed to protect ourselves from AI. And I guess at the robotic cooler level, it's probably not a big deal. But it is a big deal, and it's something that we need to consider. I spent some time at Stanford last year talking to a couple AI experts, and they're very concerned about the downside of AI. But personally, I think the upside of AI is so profound that we need to move forward, but we need to move forward with caution.
As a big Asimov fan, that reference made me smile, and it is intriguing that even if they don't know about Asimov's specific thing, that concept, I think, is one that's really pretty important.
And you know, going through that, what I want to do, knowing that we've got just a little bit of time before we wrap up our interview, is to talk about, again, just kind of investing. You know, your book outlines not just these sectors and what's new and what could be coming in the future, but you also just talk about good investing. And the book states, you know, that a sustainable investment strategy has two core goals. What are those goals?
Well, in my opinion, and that's very subjective, but in my opinion, the two goals is it has to be good for the planet and it has to be good for our portfolio. So it's got to be a win-win situation. We have to do the right thing, impact invest, but not at the expense of our own portfolio. And the whole paradigm of my book is that you can do both. There's been a lot of research that shows that investing in sustainable investments actually outperform investing in non-sustainable investing. So this is not a tough thing to do. Through inexpensive investing in ETFs, through using firms like IntentVest, which is a robo firm, in 5 minutes, you can open an account and start investing in sustainable investments and theoretically, based on a lot of data, make more money than if you did not invest in sustainable investments and help the planet at the same time.
which again, it's a win-win for many people. And then, you know, as we conclude the interview, what advice do you have to our listeners who are looking to, you know, go into this sector and start to look at impact investing?
Well, I would say to keep it simple. I mean, I think someone who listens to this interview might think it's interesting but daunting. And it doesn't have to be daunting. All a person has to do is go to BlackRock's iShares and invest some money in a sustainable ETF, or get on IntentVest website and open an account. This is not a big deal. If you buy into the concept at all, it's so easy to make this investment and to make an impact on the world and improve your financial situation in 5 minutes.
We've been speaking with Scott Swartz. He's IntentVest CEO and founder and author of the new book, Investing in a New Climate, A Sustainable Approach to Investing in a New Climate.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the show, make sure you leave a review no matter how you listen. And we'd appreciate it if you clicked 5 stars.